Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Rosenblum.
We suck, so your self-quarantine doesn't have to.
Mark Grody.
I think there will be lasting derivatives of this once we get through it, and hopefully we will, with minimal damage, that people will be more aware, honestly, of washing their hands and
good thing.
And apparently wiping.
They suck, so you don't have to.
They can do what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Now they don't have any problem getting it done.
Founding members of the WB Club.
Wake and bake. Come on.
Where's Toby?
So I'm practicing, you know, social distancing, and I have a few tips for everybody, you know, no sharing pipes or joints, things like that.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Good morning, welcome in. Saturday Suckage for you, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody. Saturday Suckage, we suck so you don't have to. No thanks necessary, no thanks necessary. It's just what we do as American heroes. We're here for you. And there is Mark Grody. Mark, how are you?
I've never really thought of us as American heroes, but we kind of are, aren't we?
Sure. Look, it's a public service. We realize our roles, and we're happy to perform them. You know,
yes,
we have the Saturday Suckage voice in our head of Tom Thibodeau.
Do your job.
That's right.
Our job. Yeah, we needed. Okay, Stifler's in. Hi, Stifler. How you doing, Stifler? He's in for Trash Panda.
Hi, guys.
Stifler, you doing okay, Stifler?
I'm doing great.
Did Trash Panda leave you any information?
He did his best.
Which means nothing.
Right.
You just lie. We know the... Is that the producer code? We lie for the guys who hang us out to dry?
No, he sent me a very nice email. I could send it over to you guys. He did a great job.
Don't ruin the narrative, Sean. You just screwed up the whole show.
Well, see, I was waiting for to take roll. We take roll of Saturday Suckage. Did he do that for you? He leave that information for you?
No, I don't know about roll call.
See, there. Yeah. And that was one of my favorite editions of the show last week, where you would take roll and give all the guys that have been quoted as saying the word suck, and we don't have that. Great.
Yeah.
Great. All right.
Suckage evolving. Yeah. Okay, that's Mike Tomlin. What about Brian Cashman?
Here's Brian Cashman. I think Brian Cashman is with Adam Studzinski today.
I also know that we suck right now, as bad as you can be.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Found it.
That's nice. And
who else?
Jake Arrieta. He advanced to, it's the only good thing, the only thing he's good for now.
This sucks, really, it does.
Yes. There you go. We're doing well.
There you go. Okay, that's nice.
And or if you suck, you'd say we're doing good.
Yeah, and by the way, that was the best news for the Cubs, right? He's not coming off the DL today. Great news. Great news.
Right, he's on the comeback trail. You know, this is you could hear the Rocky music gently playing in the background. He's going to eventually go and get back stretched out in the minors and try to figure out what is wrong because, you know, he said, as Jake Arrieta said, he's been through worse, and maybe he has in his Baltimore days when they screwed him up when he was an Oriole.
Weren't they? And that was the thing when he came back here from Philadelphia.
they were supposed to fix him. The Cubs organization was supposed to know everything about him and was be able to fix him. That was all the talk, and that worked for like a month. And then he went back to being the Jake Arrieta everyone feared. So
yeah, and here
whatever.
We are.
He's not coming off. So there are. This is the week once Jed said what Jed said last week. It's pretty much high. We quit. Here's our white flag. We quit, and everybody became a rumor. And so the rumors have been bouncing around, right? You've talked about them. You've been on the radio at every. You've sort of been playing radio whack-a-mole, haven't you? You've been on all kinds of different shows.
Pretty much, and it just happened to be on my watch when the first trade occurred, the one sending Jock Peterson to Atlanta for the 23-year-old first base prospect Bryce Ball. So yes, I've been on a lot. The suckage has overflowed to weekdays in my case.
Okay, well that's good. We need to begin our own version of an insurrection. So it's Bryant, Kimbrel, Rizzo, and Baez. Those are all the hot names. Jock Peterson
Agreed.
Was a sign and flip kind of thing. And there still might be more. That's not to say those are the only guys, but those are the big ones for two different reasons. One is Kimbrel is untouchable, and everybody needs that. And somebody's going to trade for him and turn him into 2021 Andrew Miller kind of thing. If you've already got a closer, then you're going to make him your Andrew Miller the way the Indians did, your sixth inning closer kind of thing. The other three are Cubs legends. And we've talked about this before. And the Anthony Rizzo, he homered yesterday coming out of the break. His back was good enough for him to homer. And he comes out of it. And he's asked, I think by Bruce Levine from inside the clubhouse, what do you make of all this? What do you think when you hear your name? And here's what Anthony Rizzo had to say.
Right now, I think, especially these next 2 weeks, just day to day, focusing on baseball. All the reports and rumors flying from now until then, probably put a full scrapbook together and see the roller coaster that it's going to take everyone on. So for me in my position, it's just staying one day at a time and not really worrying about what's going to happen. What's going to happen is going to happen, and none of us have any control of it.
I think there's a good reason he doesn't have to worry about it. Here's my Anthony Rizzo conspiracy theory. He, in what appeared to be a demonstrably idiotic decision, when he announced in June he was not vaccinated, would not get vaccinated, and has yet to give any good reason why, it made him untradeable. Look what happened when the Yankees got back from the All-Star game. They're not the only team to suffer COVID-19 problems and have to quarantine and isolate. Man, the Yankees had their game with the Red Sox canceled. I think, here's my theory. I have no idea if it's true or not, but I love this theory. He made himself untradeable by taking the demonstrably stupid stance that I'm not getting vaccinated when this once-in-a-century pandemic is sweeping the world. So who would trade for him? Who would bring him in to a locker room, especially now as things start heating up in the trade market and you see what happens to the Yankees? And by the way, the Cubs are 10-19 since Rizzo admitted how demonstrably stupid he is in that regard. So that's my theory. He made himself untradeable, and he's going to be here, and then we'll see what happens.
Untradeable, maybe, but that doesn't mean the Cubs would then, because he is not getting vaccinated, it doesn't mean the Cubs would need to sign him to a long-term deal. And so that's where I love thought process behind your conspiracy theory, but now the reports we're hearing, at least from John Heyman specifically, is that the Cubs are considering extending Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez. So doesn't that poke a little bit of a hole in the theory if Jed Hoyer does decide to extend him? And it's my theory that Jed Hoyer was told, maybe by Tom Ricketts, okay, you can keep two. Go ahead and keep two. It's like choosing two. It's like sides at a restaurant. You could pick two sides.
No, that's what comes. Panera. It's the you pick two. Yeah. Here's your entree. You pick two.
Right. All right. You want the macaroni. You want the soup. Yeah. So you get to choose two. And wherever Jed Hoyer goes or whatever he does, it always has to involve Anthony Rizzo. We know that. He was with him in Boston, in San Diego. He gets to the Cubs. He's like, okay, look, I don't care what we do. Let's get Rizzo. Andrew Cashner throws hard. That's fine. Ship him out. Let's get Rizzo in. So, of course, he's going to pick Rizzo. And then maybe Tom Ricketts said, hey, you know, fans really like Javier Baez. They, you know, there are kids who probably come to the ballpark to see Javier Baez. And we don't think Chris Bryant likes us anymore. So maybe we focus on those two.
Well, if you do that, then what you're doing, you made a decision that we're not signing the best player on the team. Why would Cub fans remain Cub fans? Because they are, because they do. Chris Bryant's your best player. He's your best hitter. He is the best of all those guys.
I agree.
And of all the World Series heroes. So the Cubs would be making a decision that Jed's beanie baby, Anthony Rizzo, is there. And it almost sounds like you're justifying, okay, Baez is a shortstop. You can't argue with the importance of that position. But Bryant plays every other position. That's just what he does, right? So, and he's your best player. But Baez is, do you think there's anything to Judd? He talked about threading Judd. The needle. Jed, I mean. Anything of Jed, Judd, I don't know.
That is
anything
awesome for some
Jed. Threading the needle.
Here comes the Judd.
The Judd, yeah. Anything to threading the needle about satisfying Marquee's programming, giving Cub fans something to watch while they try to sell subscriptions to a very expensive, what was supposed to be a wheelbarrows full of money and probably hasn't been and won't be. As they wave the white flag, but they have to give you something to watch, and that's Baez over Bryant. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily Baez over Bryant, but I do believe there's something to the idea that when Theo Epstein came to the Cubs in 2012, that he had full control and full power to do whatever he wanted to do, and that included having the team be terrible for a couple of years, and he probably had to tell, you know, Tom Ricketts and whomever, that, hey, here's the deal. This is going to be painful, but you got to let me do it my way or I'm not going to do it. And they obviously acquiesced, and they, to their credit, they gave him complete power. They revamped their minor league system and the facilities, infrastructure at Wrigley Field, the whole thing, and they allowed him to do it his way. I think it's different this time around. I don't think that, and maybe it's because of the substantial losses from the pandemic, I don't think this time around they're completely letting Jed Hoyer do it totally his way. I think they are telling, because Jed Hoyer, right, he won't call it a rebuild, right? He won't do it. He won't allow us to do it, even though it is a rebuild of sorts. So I do think that the edict this time, and it could come from the business side too, absolutely 100% from Marquee and business operations and Tom Ricketts, which is all kind of bundled into one, that, hey, yeah, we're not doing the whole 2012 thing again this time. It doesn't necessarily have to be Javier Baez, but wink, wink, nod, nod, that'd be a pretty good choice. I do believe that if they thought that, look, Chris Bryant is going to go into free agency because of the agent that he has, and he's going to listen to every single offer. I don't know if the Cubs were to offer the hot to match it or go above, if Chris Bryant would still want to come back to the Cubs. You know, I don't know. Is he mad because of them playing with his service time way back when? A lot of people assume that is the case. Does Chris Bryant have his eyes on someplace else no matter what? Or does he, as he has said over and over, love Chicago and actually want to be here? That's the great mystery. So I think that's why you're hearing Baez and Rizzo, because both of those guys, throughout this whole process, there have been overtures from both of their camps that they would like to stay with the Cubs. There hasn't been that overture as loudly from the Chris Bryant side.
That's true. And all of them have turned down contract proposals. You know,
supposedly.
It's been reported, right, supposedly. But that's what's been reported. They've turned down some version of it, and maybe the Cubs are making one last run of saying, this is it, take it or leave it, which is kind of what Larry Himes did to Greg Maddux, here, this is our offer. No, I want to go to free agency. Okay, we have to go spend our money. They did, and Maddux went on to just be unbelievable. Ugh. So don't you look at Bryant and you say, you know, Bryant, and there's a similarity between where Bryant's free agency begins and Yu Darvish is in. Jed tried to play up the idea, well, we got out of a big contract on the back end of, you know, three more years at that kind of money.
Come on.
Right? Yeah. Right? That's what he tried to say.
I know, that's what he said. Right. And I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying that to him. Don't, please. That was a salary dump. You don't do that and then tell us that your season means something and then tell us that when you're in first place in June that you were going to plan on being a buyer. I mean, if you were planning on being a buyer, keep your best pitcher. So that's, I don't believe that at all.
No, I don't either. Nor do I believe that the whole idea of like this is not a rebuild. Of course, it's a rebuild.
Yeah.
What else are you gonna do, right? Yeah. Isn't that the point? Why did you get, you know, four kids? You got to drive to Dairy Queen after a game in the Darvish trade. That's what you did.
Exactly.
That's how you're doing this. And who was this you know Ball Bunyan guy you got for Jock Peterson? Right? That's his nickname, yeah. Ball Bunyan.
So it is Ball Bunyan.
They keep playing Cub fans for stupid, I believe. I don't know if Jed is doing this voluntarily. Jed saying what he has to say as Tom Ricketts works the marionette strings that, oh, you have to say this. Yeah, this is what people on Marquee want to hear. We need the Marquee people to be satisfied because you have to say this. So there's not any kind of cross-messaging. Of no, this is not a rebuild. No, pay no attention to the teenagers behind the curtain. I mean, it's just it is demonstrably stupid, and they are lying to you because, of course, they quit when they made the Darvish trade, and they go, "Oh my God, really? Are we really competing? Is our division that bad? Can't anybody play this game?" And now other teams are starting to play the game, and the Cubs have less than 0.1% of winning the World Series. And maybe the Cubs don't think World Series is the goal anymore. It sounds like they're happy to settle for the playoffs. But Jed even referenced single digits. And you're like 6.4%, according to baseballreference.com. That's what your Cubs playoff odds are. So good luck to you. Then what's he going to do? Why, if you keep them... Why didn't you, if you keep these World Series legends, why didn't you add on? And if you trade them, of course you're rebuilding. I mean, what are you going to get? Some other 30-year-old for Rizzo? I don't see how you can believe Jed Hoyer.
The rebuild started when they traded Yu Darvish because this last call thing's been going on for 3 years, and that's why I think. That, of course, Jed Hoyer, I've said this over and over, of course Jed Hoyer hated that they lost 11 in a row. That's excruciating. It's embarrassing. But I think that there was a little bit of relief in knowing which direction to go because if it had gotten down to that point, I mean, our narrative had been, hey, what if the Cubs are in first place at the deadline and they're only one game up? Do you sell off or do you go for it? And obviously that question was negated, that thinking was negated for Jed Hoyer, and I think that there had to have been a little bit of relief. And he said he was going to be a buyer if the Cubs were in first place. You could say that then, you know what I mean? And I suppose you could believe him, but really, how much of a buyer would they have been? They would have had to have been huge buyers to actually do damage in the postseason. They would have to have bought back Yu Darvish or somebody of that level, even if it's not a pitcher, to actually advance farther than they have in the playoffs since 2017, which has been just about nowhere.
By the way, after our show last week, we wondered if we would still be talking about Chicago Cub Wilson Contreras. He has not been traded. But I still kind of expect that. And you know what? He's right behind Kimbrel in value. He's more valuable than Bryant because he's got that extra year, that control.
Yeah.
And he's a catcher. and that team across town needs a catcher.
That'd be huge. I mean, and he we forget to say this. He's a terrific player all around, too.
Uh-huh.
Considering the position that he plays, he is a terrific hitter. He has become a good receiver. I don't know if he's a great receiver still, but we know what his arm is. But absolutely, yeah. And then it goes back to the question of, hey, White Sox, are you going to be afraid to make a bold move? Are you just going to middle it and dangle your 20th best prospect, or are you going to get a little bit bold and say, yeah, you know what? We've got this Jared Kelly, we've got this Yolky Cespedes. What are you going to do to make your team better at catcher, second base, and oh my God, the bullpen? Because it's based on last night. Not getting scary. Much better.
It's yeah. scary. It's not the reliable. That was supposed to be the lockdown part of it. That was the most solid thing. And you go, oh my God, really? Again, here we got to worry about that. Here we got to fear Aaron Bummer. No, we're a bouncing
yeah.
ball. But
no.
maybe Contreras makes a stop. See, here's the thing about that whole situation and why I still think Contreras is in play as a trade target. He would be that kind of. Well, whether it's criticism or honesty or candor or frustration, not only would be welcome on the South Side, was welcomed last year when Dallas Keuchel said it and kind of changed the season. It woke people up. And here the Cubs are. You got the Cubs manager, David Ross, has got his red ass about, no, we can't say that, and we had to have, you know, one-on-one sessions with players, and we had to talk, and we can't do that. And I understand why you want to keep that in the family, but you're also the people who are paying your salaries, the people buying tickets, the people buying subscriptions to Marquee, want to hear somebody say the obvious. And the obvious is that there's efforts questionable, mental approaches questionable, you guys yet to adapt, and the idea of Wilson Contreras being welcomed on the South Side over because he could be candid, he wouldn't be afraid to call people out, and it's worrisome on the North Side. Well, what kind of snowflakes you got in your Cubs clubhouse? So
yep.
Ross said to lobby for it.
Yeah, Ross did not respond correctly, 100%. You know, he's protected himself because effort is an indictment on himself. So Ross said the wrong thing. And then Chris Bryant and Craig Kimbrell said the right thing because KB said what David Ross should have said, that he wears his heart on his sleeve. KB was quick to say, hey, don't look at me. I'm working my ass off here. Don't bring me into this, Lieutenant Weinberg. He wears his heart on his sleeve. Lieutenant Weinberg, what you looking at me for, man? right? Lieutenant Weinberg, right?
Yep.
Like, don't look at me, man. I'm like the third lawyer in this movie. A Few Good Men, kids. And then Kimbrell said, hey, it's nothing personal, just frustration, love his passion. Those were the answers, not what David Ross said. And even Ian Happ, he had a good one. He tried to kind of excuse it because of potentially maybe because of the language barrier that Wilson Contreras didn't really, you know, mean what he said. And then he went on a rant about the narrative of just because teams are losing that they're not trying hard is BS. But yeah, that's what Wilson Contreras was essentially saying. So it's like everybody has handled this well since David Ross, quite frankly. So
yeah.
I mean, that's the answer, right? Wears his heart on his sleeve. He's frustrated, love his passion, nothing personal.
And where's the lie? I mean, that's it.
There's a lie.
That's also part of it. Where's the lie in what he said? So
none.
We need to take a break. We will talk about this with Vinny Duber at the top of the hour. He's Sox Insider for NBC Sports Chicago. And by the way, Vinny Duber wrote a story that I've been dying to get to, and this is perfect, about this is the nexus of Saturday Suckage Sports and the Wake and Bake Club, or at least a tangent of it, and we will talk about that. 1 o'clock, we'll talk Bears with Habarkish.
Good.
He scores senior NFL insider and the Ubermacher for Shaw Media. There are Bears items out there. But our phone number is 312-644-6767 for you texters. And the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. That number, 312-644-6767, is also the number that if somebody makes a mistake and makes a phone call, then Stifler, our producer for today, will play our breaking caller sounder and we'll bring it on. But I'm sort of asking for calls to call. Oh, is that it? Do we actually have a caller or are you just practicing?
They hung up. They hung up. That was half a call.
Yeah, that's good, Stifler. That's Saturday Suckage at its best, eh?
Oh, so beautiful.
we will, because I got a question about, I'll describe an incident that occurred that I was involved in this week with a Cub fan and a Sox fan. And I don't know if Cub fans and Sox fans feel the same way, but it was loud and eye-opening. So I'll share that after this. I'll get Mark's thoughts on this. We are Saturday Suckage, indubitably. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosen with Mark Grody. Saturday Suckage, the Wake and Bake Club. We'll talk a little Wake and Bake, top of the next hour with Vinny Duber. And he's got a really good name to talk Wake and Bake with. So we will continue this discussion, Cubs, Sox, deals, and it just got more interesting. Buster Olney of ESPN tweeted out, if Lindor's injury is serious, these oblique injuries can take 4 to 6 weeks, then Javier Baez could be a perfect match for the Mets. He could hold down shortstop initially and then move to second or third later, in keeping with his career-long versatility. So I don't know what that does to Chris Bryant's trade value, but again, he's the best of the players the Cubs are lucky to dump. I mean, as inexplicably stupid as this is. And Javi Baez with the high swing and miss rate, there you go. That plays out more acutely in the playoffs. The Mets, I believe, have bigger ideas than that and then just winning the division. So that's what Jed Hoyerty, that's what the Cubs need, some kind of market for any or all of these guys. And the market is on the South Side as well. So I'm having this discussion with Joey Ice and a woman named AMS, and this is in the frozen aisle of my Trader Joe's, and I'm talking about why the Cubs need to be very careful trading any of these World Series legends, give them a place to win, a good place to land, still with a chance to re-sign them when they enter free agency, but the South Side is particularly attractive for this reason, I think anyways. If you were to trade, say, Bryant to the White Sox, he doesn't have to move. There's a guy who is just 8.1 miles south. Same with Baez. You trade them there, the White Sox need a second baseman. I don't know if they need a second baseman with a 36% strikeout rate, but they need a second baseman. And he can play the game, and he can hit with a lot of power. And they could use that. What he does against Houston, I don't know, but he can't do worse than the crap we've already seen. So I bring this up, and then the Cub fan in the group, AMS, says, screams no. It's a screech you could hear down to Wrigley Field, as if you can't trade that kind of Beanie Baby of legend and huggable player El Mongo. You can't trade him on the South Side. No, he can't go there. No. And even if it helps your team, which I have no idea if Cub fans feel this way universally or just get out and get me the best thing possible. What do you think?
I've got the feeling that Cubs fans, you know, I talked about the relief that maybe Jed Hoyer felt that he knew which direction they were going. I put Cubs fans in that group too, that the 11 game losing streak, the losing previous to this where they would crash and burn and wouldn't score runs at the ends of seasons since, I mean, even in 2017. So I think Cubs fans have been seeing the same thing over and over. I think that there has been sort of a warning for last call for 3 years now. I think Cubs fans have had enough time to deal with it. I do think that there, of course, there's an attachment to Chris Bryant and Javier Baez. They love these players. They won a damn World Series for them. So there's going to be some sentimentality towards it. But I think I've gotten the feeling in, you know, being on a lot lately that Cubs fans are, yeah, it sucks, but yeah, we get it. We get it. We got to do what we got to do here. You know, just kind of like it's painful. It's gonna be horrific to see Chris Bryant and or Javier Baez or whomever in other uniforms, and then when they come back to Wrigley Field, we're going to give them a, you know, 5 minute standing ovation. But this is what needs to be done. We have put our all into it as fans here, and it just keeps on not working out the way we want it to. We need some sort of change. So I do think that that is something that Cubs fans could handle right now. Some can't. Some are not going to be able to. I mean, some, of course, are going to be on that side of, what are you doing trading Chris Bryant or Wilson Contreras or any of these guys? And there is an attachment. I want to ask you this question, though, about, yeah, I mean, those guys would look good on the South side, Chris Bryant and Javier Baez, but don't you think that the White Sox should be maybe as much as targeting those guys, targeting Craig Kimbrel, Andrew Chafin, and Ryan Tepera of the Cubs, because they could probably use all three at this point. I don't feel good anymore about, I mean, it's been going on all year with the White Sox with it, an underachieving bullpen, and I have said, maybe even as recently as a month ago, that, yeah, I still think these guys can get it together, and now I'm saying, I don't know, you know, and I understand Aaron Bummer just came off the injury, so I'll give him a minute, but, you know, he gives up an RBI hit last night. Cody Hoyer did not look sharp. Ruiz gives up the three-run double last night, and it is my greatest fear for the White Sox, that who you got other than Michael Kopech and Liam Hendricks.
You're so right. That comes down to maybe the biggest reason the biggest demand on Tony La Russa. Whatever reason you signed him, you brought him in, it was Chairman Reinsdorf said, we're doing this. And it's not, here's our group decision. I decide what our group is doing. And that's the way it is. And the one advantage, the biggest advantage, the most salient part of his presence in the dugout is game management, knowing his players, knowing what his players can do, what they can't do. He didn't know them from before. He's learning about them, mm-hmm. And that is an ongoing process. We don't know what he's learning. You know what? I don't know if it's a fear, but you're sort of holding your breath to figure out what he learns, and you'll see in October. So that's like the first and last sign. That could be the final exam. Oops, we're out.
They took Matt Foster away from him. They're like, no more. No more. Even though the last time he pitched at the major league level, he actually recorded the final two outs in that final game against Baltimore. But they're like, you know what? We're going to go ahead and take that away from you.
And that may well be true. And the one thing we also haven't seen, their rotation is really good, but I want to see them use the opener strategy a couple times. It may not make sense to do it when you have a rotation that has been that solid, but I want to see Kopech start. Maybe he's your sixth inning closer if you don't trade for Kimbrel. And the whole, you know, when you brought up trading for Kimbrel or Chafin or Tepera, Kimbrel's the guy, but I don't know the mentality of those guys. Can he accept something other than the ninth inning? And you never know until you know, until he's there. And the way Andrew Miller did, Andrew Miller was just perfect right there.
Liam Hendricks was on the radio with Ranji and I yesterday, and he was like all for accepting other innings. So we know that, I don't know if the Sox would ever want to do it, whether or not they think he could thrive actually in other innings. But for the record, for whatever it's worth, Liam Hendricks said he is down with pitching in any damn inning.
I love that, and I believe that's true. Nothing I've seen from Liam Hendricks says he's anything but about winning. At whatever he has to do, at whenever he has to do it, whenever he's called upon. We've all seen that evolve in baseball. You saw it most notably in the 2016 World Series. It was right up close. It was in your living room. And it was in your radio booth, Mark, that sixth-inning closer. That's when we need to win the first part of the game so we can win the second part of the game. And that's what happened. And that's what Andrew Miller did. And the Sox could benefit by that. And that's why Kimbrel is the name. I keep coming back to, what does Tony La Russa know so far? What does he believe? Who does he trust?
Right.
And I want to see Kopech start. I want to see you never know when you're going to get in a situation the way the White Sox were last year. Ricky Renteria and Dr. Cooper were unprepared for what they faced in trying to beat Oakland in the playoffs. They had never gone to the opener route. They had never done that. You have to do it for practice. You need to know what you can do, who these guys can go to, and play all the what ifs. Oh, well, we did it. We had it all set up, and then Crochet got hurt. Oh, you didn't factor that in? You don't think that's a problem with a guy coming out of college? And, you know, I just don't. I don't want to see the White Sox get caught again. And I've seen Tony La Russa's, you look at his lineups and you look at his pitching decisions, and they've been criticized. At the same time, I know that he's doing this to figure out what he needs to know in October. And I think that's something he may need to know. You have no idea where you're going to be, what your roster's going to be, what your arm's going to be, what your bullpen's going to be, what your rotation's going to be come October. You use the regular season, especially with an 8-game lead, to prepare for all that, to see what you know. I want to see that. And I want to see, make sure that Carlos Rodon, you know what, if you skip one of his starts, that's good. That's fine. I'm good with that. We're going to go with the openers. Carlos Rodon's going to pitch later in the rotation. Maybe he'll go a week between starts. We're good with that. I am. What do you think?
I love the idea of giving Michael Kopech a bigger role, because as much as I like him coming in clean innings and just striking out the side and oohing and aahing his slider and his velocity, I want to either see him do what you just said. You know, I hadn't thought about that, but I like it, him being the opener. I would like to see him come in where they put Cody Hoyer in a couple of times, or Crochet, or any of these guys, or maybe come in with runners on second and third and less than two outs. So I would like to see them use him differently. And maybe this is all gearing up towards them doing that once the postseason hits. As for Tony La Russa, you know, the stupid debate of, do managers matter, whatever, for the regular season, they do matter in the postseason. That is when baseball managers go to work. That does matter. And obviously Tony La Russa has had a very good track record there, but that's where every pitch does count and every move does count, and games can be won or lost based on what the manager does. So yeah, I think that I hope Tony La Russa knows what he has. I think that it with what they did with Matt Foster yesterday, and hey, welcome back Ronaldo Lopez. He got in yesterday. How about that? Mm-hmm. Lopez came in, and I think he gave up a single, but he was okay. He was giving up some hard contact in the game. We're starting to see it. They're trying different things and hoping that they work, because they know that they have issues. So to go back to that point you were making about Tony La Russa getting to know what he has, I think he does know what he has, and it's not as good as he thought. So it's kind of like, hey, help, help.
Help, help. See where I'll make my own help. I'll figure help. Out my own help.
So right. We'll, you know, it's like we talk about the first trade going down with the Cubs, like it began. Maybe that signified, you know, Ronaldo Lopez and the sending down of Matt Foster and all the little maneuvers they were making. Jace Fry is gone. Aaron Bummer has returned. It's sort of like, okay, all right, it's beginning. The really trying. We got an 8-game lead in the division. Let's tighten up some things. Let's try some things, because we could afford to do that right now.
Right, you got to take advantage of it. That's one of the reasons That's one of the things that this lead gives you, if you're the White Sox, is to try everything you might envision in the postseason, anything that might come up. One of the things, Tony La Russa is the kind of guy, the kind of manager, I mean, the first major league manager I really covered was Gene Mauch. I covered the Angels. He was the first guy who would, he hated talking to the media, but he was really good when he talked. And he had said at the time, I play three games a night. He plays the game before the game. Mm-hmm. He manages the game before the game. He manages the game, and then he manages it afterwards. So he's playing three games a night. And I believe La Russa is that kind of guy, too. Questioning, second-guessing everything he does. What, playing all the what-ifs before, playing the what happened afterwards. And in the middle, trying to make the best decision on the best information possible of things that we don't even know. And I think he's that guy doing that thing. And I think that there's more to come. I imagine there will be moments where there's inexplicable decisions made and Tony La Russa may not say, I'm doing this to find something out. And yet he was doing it to find something out. Whether it, like you said, like he knows what he has, or maybe he knows a particular situation, a one-off kind of thing. Maybe he can drill down with one guy, one situation, one kind of opposing batter. Maybe he's working to do that. And all of these notes are being compiled, and then you have your playoff playbook. He's always been that kind of guy, and the one thing the White Sox expect from him is they're going to win the matchup in the dugout. And I think this is how he goes being that guy. We'll see. I want to hear more about Liam Hendricks. Do you have more on Liam Hendricks? Can you talk? Because I had a thought about Liam Hendricks from the All-Star game. But no, you and Raji had him on. Can we talk about Liam Hendricks?
I want to hear what you had to say about Liam Hendricks. We talked about Liam Hendricks all day yesterday. So.
Well, good. We should.
Yeah. Yes.
He's wonderful. He's colorful.
He's an entertaining dude. Yeah.
Yeah, as are you and Ronji.
Oh, thanks, Stevie Sunshine.
You and Ronji. So this is Saturday Seconds. We'll take a break. We will come back top of the hour. We'll talk White Sox with Vinny Duber of NBC Sports Chicago. And we'll also introduce a tangent to the Wake and Bake Club. It's just wonderful when all these worlds collide. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I don't necessarily need the ninth inning, but I still believe that it doesn't matter who's coming up in the seventh or the eighth or the ninth. The ninth inning, the three outs in the ninth are the hardest ones to get, regardless of if it's 7-8-9 or if it's 2-3-4. It doesn't matter. For whatever reason, those last three outs, it just comes down to the fact that sometimes the opposition just can smell it, they can sniff it, they whatever it is, I have no idea. But those three outs at the end of the game tend to be a lot harder. but I couldn't care less which inning I pitched. If their matchups come in and I'm ready, like they need me in the seventh, I'll be ready in the seventh. They need me in the sixth, I'll be ready in the sixth. It doesn't matter. I just want to pitch. So I just wait down there and wait for the phone to ring. And as soon as the phone rings, I get it going, no matter what.
Like that, Stevie Sunshine. I mean, he does sound believable and genuine when he says that, doesn't he?
Ding, Liam ding, Hendricks. Ding. That's your right answer. We have a winner. Yes, that's Liam Hendricks. And that's exactly right. And smart ball players know that. They can handle it. He obviously could if the White Sox acquired Craig Kimbrell and Kimbrell said, I'm much more comfortable pitching the ninth, and then you watched him throw this year, you go, oh my God, he's untouchable. That's a beautiful thing. And Liam Hendricks says, oh yeah, I'll be there for the sixth, the seventh, the fifth if you need me. Whenever the save in the middle of the game is there to be had, I'm your guy. And we know that he can go more than one out, one inning, one player. You know what? He can do that. We've seen that. That's an example of what I said before. Tony La Russa has seen just how far he can extend him and how effective he is and what's he like the next day and how much rest did he need beforehand. Was that fun? He sounds
like...
It was
so fun. Yeah, so... I'll have the money cut for you in What Are You Doing, Wagner, assuming we're doing What Are You Doing, Wagner today. So okay, good. So you'll hear some of it then. He is absolutely a delight to speak to. And it was funny because he was talking about, you know, the blowing saves and stuff like that. And, of course, I had to bring up the fact that he kind of gave up a home run in game three of the ball, the last game before the All-Star break, gave up a very big home run in the ninth inning to Trey Mancini. And he told me, or us, that, yeah, he said I was pissed about it, but then I was able to joke around about it. He's like, I told Trey Mancini that I was just warming him up for the home run derby. So, you know, he has a sense of humor about it, and he's able to compartmentalize, I feel like, better than most closers, because a lot of them want nothing to do with speaking after they blow a save, or certainly are not making jokes about it. But, you know, and I know that a lot of closers have that bravado, that sort of crazy, you know, personality, but I feel like it's different with him because it's every time he goes out there. Like, he's shouting and swearing, and, you know, he said that he really can't pitch without swearing, as we found out with Joe Buck, and as you will hear a little bit later on. So he's great, man. And the thing is, everybody loves a good personality as long as you're good on the field. So that he puts both true. Together, right? You know, it doesn't matter. It gets very exhausting if you're not good. So the really important part is that this guy has so far lived up to the 3-year, $54 million contract they handed him.
Yeah, right. Yes, he's the guy. You trust him. You love having him out there. So I had a thought about miking him up in the All-Star game, and I just how it reflected on him and the White Sox, and just we'll save that if the money cut is coming up, and we can talk about that later. In the meantime, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk White Sox with Vinny Duber of NBC Sports Chicago. He's the White Sox insider, and we will have a little bit of an adventure. We'll wander through the disc golf course of the Wake and Bake Club just to see what we find there, and see if we find a Sox pitcher. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.